I've gone to games in Philadelphia and thought I saw everything from some of those animals up there, the way they behave. And I've never seen anything like the way Florida fans behave themselves, the way they made our fan base walk through the gauntlet. Jeremy Foley allowing our fans to be treated as poorly and as subhumanly as they were before, during, and after those games in that Steve Spurrier era and right in this time period I'm talking about. Because what I saw in 1997 is in no way acceptable from civilized people. Those people there, and I use the term people loosely, those young kids, I had a guy jump out in front of my car. I said, son, you don't know me. I'm running your ass over. And I was 100% serious on my way back to where we were staying at the hotel. I've never seen anything like kids jumping up on the tops of cars and trying to rip the hoods off of cars, smashing windows, smashing windshields, kicking cars from the side, kicking in dents in the side of cars, and no police presence at all. Like anarchy almost. It was debaucherous. It was disgusting. It was, as I said before, uncivilized, and there was no place for it. And this animosity and hatred in that rivalry was only fueled by the way Florida not only condoned in that time period, but almost incentivized their fan base, especially those kids, their fan base and especially those kids, to behave like complete and total rednecks. And I want to make sure I get that in there. I am saying the term redneck, as in neck behavior. And there was no place for it. And so it's against that backdrop that they come here in 98. And look, the word was out. Tennessee wasn't the only team in the league that was treated that way. They wore it on their sleeve like a badge of honor. And there is no way I was going to let some punk-ass Florida fan punk me on my show live in front of all those people, some little Florida punk, which is what this was. The guy was 3 times bigger than me, by the way, for the story that I'm about to tell you. But as I've said before, that landing down there on Cumberland Avenue was jam-packed with people. And at that point in time, after seeing what I saw, in 97, there was no way in the world I was going to sit there and just watch them run amok. Not in Knoxville. Not that year. No way, no sir, no how. Absolutely no way, no sir, no how. So I grabbed the microphone. I'm doing my show. This Florida kid comes up into my mic and he starts screaming and yelling. And the next thing I know, I said to him, I said, sir, if you don't back away, this is going to end painfully for you. And out of the corner of my eye, some Tennessee fan, I don't know who you were, sir, God bless you, sacked him from behind. And I mean DDT'd him on the ground. It was one of the most beautiful things I'd ever seen. And I have seen some beautiful things when it comes to Florida fans. Because, well, the next year down there in Gainesville, Florida, I'll give you another story. The next year in Gainesville, Florida. And this is just me. This is just what I witnessed. And I am not making this up. I promise you, that story's not made up. People that were there that day will tell you, I'm not making that story up. Those kids, they're lucky. They're lucky that there wasn't somebody killed the way those kids behaved. There was nothing jovial about it. There was nothing collegial about it. There was nothing sporting about it. It was like those kids over in Britain is how they were behaving. They were hooligans. And there's just no place for that. absolutely no place for that. It's a disgrace that it went on then. It's a disgrace, thinking back on it, that they let it go on. It's a disgrace the way our fans were treated, and I just wanted to get that on the record here. So let me give you another Florida fan story. Florida Field, they just fostered an atmosphere there of lawlessness. It's the only way I can put it. And there was nothing cute about it. I don't know if I can underscore this enough to you. But this is a vivid memory that I have, and I'm going to share it with you. I'm going to forward you ahead to 99, and then I'm going to take you back down to Cumberland Avenue where we were doing our remotes. So it's 99, and it's Saturday morning, and I'm down there with Griff, who you'll hear about here in a second. And Griff, yes, I am diming you out on my vacation week. I haven't seen Griff in forever. So, and I hope you're still a simpleton. And I mean that in the purest sense. I'm out getting my steps in before the game, and it was a night game back in 99. But I was outside the stadium probably 10:30 in the morning, maybe 11 o'clock. And there was a Tennessee guy walking, and I came up on them. And as I approached, there was this drunk guy, Florida fan, walking. I could see he was antagonizing this guy. And as they came in the earshot, I heard him start cussing at the guy, and he was calling this guy a no-good coward and a P-word and just cussing, a dog cussing him as I got closer and closer. Finally, the guy turns around to the kid, and he says, "Look, man," he said, "you don't know me, and I would appreciate it if you wouldn't talk that way in front of my daughter. She's not even 10 years old." And this Florida fan, as Florida fans were back in the late 90s, turns to this guy and he says, "Well, what do we have here?" He looks right at the daughter and he says, "Your father is a no good P word. You see that?" This guy was holding his daughter's hand. He lets the kid's hand go. He rears back and throws the greatest right hand I've ever seen in my life. Mike Tyson would blush. Forrest Griffin would be blushing at this takedown. This cat went down like ba-boom. The guy hovered over him, the Tennessee fan, and said, "Why did you make me do that? And you better stay down. Don't you dare get up. And don't you dare say another word to me." And I just kept right on walking. Tony, did you tend to the guy that got knocked down? Absolutely not. That kid got what was coming to him. Absolutely got. He talked himself that day, as far as I'm concerned, into the ER, which I'm sure is where he went. Because, I mean, this punch was absolutely beautiful. And that's the kind of stuff that went on back then. No need for it. Nothing fun about it. Fun to recollect on. And they gave us some good stories through the years. But let's go back now down to Cumberland Avenue.
But I'll never forget doing a series of shows down there, including one time Sterling Hinton went off and cut an absolute promo on Lee Corso, who was such a good sport. I think it was a year later. He was on the air with Lee Corso, and he said, "Lee Corso, you called the Tennessee game. You referred to me as a rubber. I know rubber arm, Lee Corso. I know rubber arm. I know." And he just went crazy on him. And Lee Corso was laughing. We used to have so much fun on those shows and draw huge crowds, afternoon drive, and have incredible times. And so I'm over at Team Sports Radio doing my thing. 2000, I'll never forget the 2000 season, how wild and crazy it was. Neyland Stadium, the Florida game, the run-up to it. We were down on Cumberland Avenue at a place called Mike and Willie's, still never paid their bills. Hey, how y'all doing? I don't forget. Sorry. They had a nice venue. I mean, even they didn't pay their bills. Made a pretty mean chicken Philly. Anyway, that's one of the things about doing this show, is that many of you think when you're seeing me do a show somewhere, "Oh, well, he's, you know, he got paid for that." No, not always, especially not in those days. In those days, I was in a place we called Hopa-Hopa-Land, which is you do a show somewhere and you hope they pay you. I don't operate like that these days. It's called wisdom. Anyway, it's all such a blessing. remember doing the show there, the simulcast, and we used to have a guy named the Gator Man. He used to call the show, and he had the train, and he was a major part of a program that Max Howe used to do called Southern Sports Tonight. Max did that, and who was the other guy that did that? That one guy, he went to the Pokey for a while. Scott. Oh, I can't remember his name. Anyway, the Gator Man came up from Piedmont, Alabama. And we had a bunch of people in our audience who said they were going to whip the Gator Man. When the Gator Man gets here, we're going to show him and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't know about that. Gator Man's kind of big. Gator Man's kind of big. So a couple people show up and they're, show me the Gator Man. Oh, he's right over there. The guy was about 6'3", about 260 pounds and ripped. His name was Ira Dent, the Gator Man. So I put him on the air, in person.
And so it's right here. I feel the need to kind of share with you a story or two about Ira Dent, the Gator Man. So I'm talking to Ira Dent. I meet him, you know, and he's just a great guy. And I hope he's out there and doing well. And I've never met a stranger. And I say to him, and you know, he likes to crack up. He's just a funny guy. And I say to him, I go, Ira, what kind of name is that? And he goes, oh, man. He goes, that's easy. He goes, Ira. He goes, you know what my name means? I said, yeah. He said, my mama took a look at me. And she said, instant romance as never before. And I went, instant romance as never before. I said, that's Irumed. Irumb. He goes, no, man. He goes, she shortened it to Ira. And I went, oh, gosh. This guy is a sheer classic. Another thing about him. He says to me, do you want to buy my book? Now, I just told you how big the guy was. Do you want to buy my book? I said, sure. He self-published his own book, and it is some of the most comical musings. It's unintentionally funny. I wish I could dig it up. I know it's in my house somewhere under the collection of rubbish outside the Raymere studio that I call a studio annex. That book was the funniest thing I have ever read. Any of you, if anybody owns a copy of The Gator Man Is Coming by Ira Dent, please get it to me. I mean, there were takeoffs of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs in there. There were Three Little Sheep or whatever, Three Little Bears, and he would write these free-form poems, and it was wrestling in a Walmart parking lot on a Saturday night in Beautiful Halls. It was the greatest thing I've ever seen. And his spirit was incredible. God bless my man, Ira Dent. But back to the Living Vol fan and what transpired between them that day and the Gator Man, Ira Dent, who, leading up, was calling that show with Max Howe, like I told you, and he was just a complete antagonist of Tennessee. But I was so proud of our audience, especially in light of the way Florida behaved during that series. Because here's where it gets good, and it's fun. You know what our audience did? Because this is how we are. It's how Tennessee fans are. People were buying the guy drinks by the time the day was over. Hey, let me get you some lunch, man. Because we, and this is the thing I love about this place, is that we enjoy it. We feel the spirit of what we're doing. We, for the most part, are pretty good sports. Now, do we have some crazy neck fans? Sure. Let me take you down to 99 down in Gainesville. We're back on the simulcast, though. 99, we're in Gainesville. We're in a place called the Purple Porpoise, which I believe the year 2 years earlier was the Grog House. It's now the Purple Porpoise. Purple Porpoise,
has a couple different rooms in it, and they've got us off, partitioned off in our own room. And they've got me in there, and I'm being simulcast on the station that Steve Russell's now on. And they cleared out the afternoon programming. So what I would do then is I would let Steve Russell have the middays on the team sports radio, and then I would take the afternoon drive on their station. And my gosh, those were fun days. Pre the internet, gave somebody else an opportunity to hear something out of another market. And back then there was some internet streaming, but very few stations did it. It was very expensive to do it. And most times, your streaming client on the internet didn't load or didn't work properly or whatever. So they're getting their full exposure to the big mouth, Tony Basilio. And my boys have my back, the Maynardville boys. They show up down there on a Friday afternoon, and this was the wild, wild west. There had to be, because Max Howe later on told me, because he was there to do his show, he was in fear that somebody was going to get hurt, and he was really afraid that I was going to get hurt. If I didn't get hurt, he was afraid he was going to get hurt. And he said, Tony, to be honest with you, I was more afraid I was going to get hurt than you were going to get hurt. So I'm down there doing my show unencumbered on a Florida station, telling people, just cutting a promo on these people. We just beat them in 98. This is 99. I'm cutting a promo on these people saying, we're going to get you. We got something for you. I'm down there with Griff, Ryan Griffith, and we're having the time of our lives. Ryan Griffith, how you doing? I remember I was with Ryan Griffith because he was chasing Asian women around. It had to be Ryan Griffith. Anyway, and I was at that point 8 or 9 years into being married. There you go. And happily married, may I add. Never played. Never played on the road, never played at home, never had a road game, never had a home game. Thank God.
Before I get to the Purple Porpoise, so that story that I'm about to tell you almost didn't happen. And Griff will attest to this. We had a rental car. We flew into Orlando. Not Jacksonville, Orlando. And one of those things where the plane gets delayed, blah, blah, blah. Well, look, I was cutting it close. And I thought Orlando to Gainesville was closer than it was. And by the time we got in our rental car, we had to book it. Now, those of you who know me, booking it has never really been an issue with your friendly radio host. In fact, I've had people around town say to me, you look like you were in your little race car and you were racing past me the other day on the interstate. I don't mean to drive quickly. It's probably the only thing in my life that I do quickly. Maybe I talk quickly. Oh, I also eat quickly. I've been known to play too quick in terms of my rhythm when I'm playing out in front of folks. So come to think about it, I do several things quickly. Just not the things that count. Just not the things that count. Like run quickly. Anyway. So we're booking. And we're coming up I-4 and I am flying. What, Tony, defined flying? Well, back then, I'm going to guess in 99 that the speed limit on that road was 60 maybe? Maybe 60. I look in my mirror and oh my God, there's a cop. He says to me, where are you going? And I said, oh, I've got to be in Ocala, Florida. I'm on WRUF radio. I'm doing a simulcast. I host a radio show in Knoxville. And he goes, do you know how fast you were going, sir? And one thing about me, I've never BS'd a cop in my life. I got respect for those people. Their job is very hard. I'm not saying I'm perfect, but that's one thing about me. I don't argue with police, generally. I did one time after a bus trip. It didn't go too well, coming off of Kingston Pike. But anyway, I asked a cop one time, I said, don't you have anything better to do? It's like 2 o'clock in the morning, and he gave me a speeding ticket. And I go, are you setting up a speed trap at like 2 o'clock in the morning? That didn't go too well. This guy here, I gave him my general deference and respect that I have for people that are in uniform. Tough job. He looks at me and he says, you know how fast you were going? And I said, no, I don't. I said, I just know I need to get there quickly. And he said, and I'll never forget this. He looks at me and he says, and he looks at Ryan and he says, well, I got news for you. If you hit a pothole going as fast as you were just going, and there are holes on these roads, if you hit a piece of debris going as fast as you're going, if your tire is cut going as fast as you're going, there won't be much of either one of you left. And here's the sad part of that story, because when my wife saw my speeding ticket, because in Florida they do two things. They hand one to you and then they mail one to you. And in those days, again, email was kind of a thing, but it wasn't a thing. And I'll never forget my wife's face when she slapped that ticket down. And he shaved a few miles per hour off of it. He said, otherwise, I got to send you to jail. I think he clocked me going 96 miles an hour. He looked at me and he said, I believe your story. And you didn't get smart with me. And I'm going to let you go, but you better slow down. He said, I could take you to jail for reckless driving. So many of you know, who followed me through the years, this story about the simulcast story and what happened down there in 2001, the story I'm about to tell, a crazy story. I'm sorry, the story in 1999, that's the year we're in right now, 1999. What you didn't realize is, I almost didn't get there. I could have spent that night with Ryan Griffith, who, shall we say, liked Asians, in jail for reckless driving. The only thing I remember about that, because I didn't have a dime to scratch against a dime back then. But I will tell you this. When I got that ticket, and it came time to pay that ticket, my wife made me write that check. And let me tell you something, brother. She just reminded me, it was double your dollars days back in Florida back then. It was one of those times where they were doubling your fines. And that thing was north of $325. Now, that, to somebody that has no money, that hurts. That hurts. That killed to write that check. And I mean killed. But let's get back to the simulcast. This story almost didn't happen, but it does happen. And it's forever a part of Tony B radio lore, the madness and the mayhem that is this show.
We're sitting there in that place, and this place is really starting to fill up, and it's really starting to fill up, and it's really starting, and it's getting fuller and fuller, and we are way past fire marshal capacity. Some Florida genius brings a bullhorn in there, and he has this bullhorn, and this is the 99 Florida game down there. This is the Saturday night game. This was the Alex Brown game. This is the eve of it. This is on that Friday. I am on there talking more trash than is humanly possible to talk. I probably cut 50 promos on Florida that day. And I'm sitting there just going crazy, unencumbered on their radio station. Thinking back on it, it's absolutely nuts. But it was fun and it had to happen. It was fun and it needed to happen. All of a sudden, out of the blue, this Florida fan starts screaming through this megaphone, juiced up, all these really pretty young girls in there and the whole thing. You know, I mean, just picture it. Everybody's drunk. It's crazy. It's smoky. You can't breathe. It's insane. I'm over there having an anxiety attack. I mean, it's just nuts in there. I'm thinking, oh my God, what have we done? All of a sudden, these Tennessee people walk in. Those of you who are there will know what I'm talking about. I do not lie. So we're sitting there. All of a sudden, I hear this guy in a megaphone go.
So you got these crazy Tennessee fans there. You got this, just a confluence. You just know something's getting ready to happen. And this is just me, and Bino says that I'm a magnet for morons, which I've got to say, could be true. I don't know. Anyway, in that time, you got to think about the height of that series. You got to think about how great Tennessee was. Tennessee was as good then as they've maybe ever been. At least in the modern era, post-black athlete, that's as good as Tennessee football's ever been. And Florida, that's as good as they've ever been. They have a nasty, nasty fan base. Have I made that clear to you? And I despise those people. And I was on the air just cutting promos. It was so crazy at the time. I'm lucky nobody got hurt because I was inciting people back then. I really was. I would say things like, we're taking your home, we're taking the keys, we're taking the wife, we're taking the kids, we're taking the deed, we're coming for you, it's going to be two in a row, we have the belt, we are the champions, you ain't got nothing, sing it, don't bring it, team bring it, I mean the whole thing. And that's when this insane, huge, huge Florida kid comes in. The guy's got to be 6'4", 6'5". He's a big old drink of water, and he's loud and obnoxious and drunk, and it's a Friday afternoon, and it's getting ready to get on. And so all of a sudden, for a second, I can't hear myself. I look over, and this guy has a megaphone. You heard me. A megaphone. Now, I gotta give the guy credit. That's ingenious. To think about, obviously, he's listening to his radio back then. Obviously, he's heard me trash talk all week. Obviously, he's sick of me. Obviously, I am buying rent inside this kid's head. And as I said, he's inebriated. He's bigger than life. This guy looked like he could have played basketball back then. I mean, I'm not kidding. He was a big dude. Big, broad-shouldered guy. And he had that megaphone. And it was not like little Jimmy Hart back in the wrestling days. This guy was a big old fella. And he had this megaphone. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm kind of in trouble here because this guy's walking my way with this megaphone. And he's going to take over my show unless something happens. And this is where it just turns into sheer Tony Basilio. But the guy's yelling things at me like, big nose wop. Big nose wop. Big nose wop. Losers go home. Loser go home. Tennessee effing sucks. I mean, of course he's cussing at me. And, you know, back then, we're flying without a net. I mean, today I've got a 10-second delay. Back then, little secret, we didn't have a delay. We didn't have any money to have a delay. We didn't have any money to have a delay. So there, now it can be told. This guy is getting ready to take over my scene, and it's not going to be good. But as I was telling you, that room is full, and I mean full, of people. The Tennessee fans wanted a place to convene. They wanted a place to for us to all be together on the road. Oh my gosh, I wish we could get good again so I could bring some of these days back. Because I'm telling you, if we could get, I don't mean good, I mean great again. Do you know how much fun it would be to travel, take our show on the road, go have fun with us again? I would do it. I would do it. Sure as I'm sitting here, I would do that. I'd bring some of that back. Insane times. It was crazy time. You just had to be there. You just had to see it. If I had one wish right now, it would be that I could transport you back into time so that you could witness and see what I saw. Because I'm telling you right now, if you could see what I saw, you'd say to me, Tone, you are really lucky you didn't get hurt. Because this was mayhem and we were not in the AM. It was about to get really out of control in there. And it had to be, in that place, a fire marshal issue. There's no way that many people should have been in that little room. Max Howe told me, he said, Tony, I was afraid that we were all going to get hurt. Did you see that? And as a kid at the time, I said, Max, come on. Looking back on it now, now that I've lived a little bit, knowing how crazy people are, we're lucky we didn't get hurt. Because here's the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey likes to say. This is where it gets good.
Big-nosed wop. Big-nosed wop. Hey, big-nosed wop. And he is just ethnic slurring me across the room like you can't even believe. Tennessee sucks. Tennessee sucks. All of a sudden, I look over at a corner of my eye, and one of the Maynardville boys, and I kid you not, no sooner did he get big wop, big wop, big wop, like three or four times out of his mouth.
So as I was mentioning, there were some Tennessee people in there. I didn't know who they were. Let me tell you something. Back then, it was all brand new for me. Like, at that point in time, I was at it for 4 years. Think about this. A radio show for 4 years going against the big monolith in town. All these big-time, huge radio companies. I'm just a guy doing my deal. And I always was. And I had this independent spirit. And I'm in the middle of Gainesville, Florida. And what Todd had birthed a couple years earlier, I'm now in the middle of this thing, and he's not around, and I'm just like, this thing is taking on a life of its own, okay? And I had no idea, but the aforementioned Maynardville boys, if I didn't mention them, here you go. The Maynardville boys, and I didn't know this, but they were a collection of guys, and they were from Maynardville, and they were big, and they were rugged, and they fought for fun. That's what they did. And they were all Vol, and these were guys that would just not afraid. And they had my back. And they were in my corner. And whenever I run into one of the Maynardville boys today, and I do from time to time, they'll come up to me and they'll go, because they don't look, none of us look the same, you know. Tony, we're all getting older, but we're still not afraid to fight. Because I'm telling you right now, that guy got a few ethnic slurs in on me, said a few things about the Vols, and as I said, started making his way toward the bandstand, making his way to our radio positioning. And that Griff guy, Griff who loves Asians, he looks at me like, what are we doing? We're getting ready to get, this guy's getting ready to take your show over. This is getting ready to get bad. We could get mobbed. We could get bum rushed. What are we doing here? Like, what's going on, T? And I'm sitting there going, you know, I don't know. I don't know what's going on, but I don't think this is going to be good. You know, I really don't think this is going to be good, Griff. Good observation on your part. All of a sudden, that cat, the big guy with the megaphone, not Jimmy Hart, or Jimmy Hart Gator, if you will, he gets about 30 feet away from me, and he keeps moving, and he's moving through this crowd of people, and he's got this megaphone. So everybody's moving out of the way for this megaphone. I look over, and I see it looks like an episode of Batman with Pip, Bow, Bam, Pow. All of a sudden, one of the Maynardville boys reaches over, grabs that megaphone out of his hand, and I mean smashes him upside the head with it. And it is on. These guys, what was a radio show, is a brawl. These guys are fighting. They're in the middle of all these co-eds, these girls, all these people that are milling around in there. In the middle of a Friday afternoon, you've got this smoky, crazy scene that has broken out in this place. And I'm watching it, and I'm trying to do my show on rudimentary remote equipment at the time. Looking back on it compared to what we have now, the phone lines, the thing cutting on and off, the whole deal. First of all, there's enough distractions to begin with. And then you factor in that you're however many miles away from home that you are in a hellhole called Gainesville, Florida, day before a big, huge game. Max Howe's over there, a regional show. I'm trying to make a good impression, you know. And all of a sudden, there's a brawl that breaks out on my watch. An absolute Pier 6 brawl. And these guys are fighting, they're scrapping, they're rolling over, they're throwing things. And you're just going, we're all going to die. We're all going to die. What do I do? Those of you listening to the show at home, what was I doing at the time? I'm describing it. What are you supposed to do? As I said before, back in those days, I'm making this up as we go along. There are no roadmaps. I didn't even have, at that point in time at that station, they promised, oh, we'll give you a budget. I was down there doing it by myself. Griff came with me because he didn't have anything better to do. And now he's like a magnate over in the Carolinas. Could buy me and sell me like 30 times. But anyway, in those days, just kind of making it up, which is a reoccurring theme. Make it up as you go along. Fake it till you make it. But on this day, there was no faking it. This was real. This was not entertainment. This was not Memorex. You can go ahead and book this right now when I tell you with a straight face that it was on like Donkey Kong. It was real deal, holy freaking feel. That's what that was. And it was craziness. Absolute craziness. But yet it was fun. Yet it was fun. And looking back on it, I'm so glad I was there. I would not trade a moment of it. But that fight, you had to see it to believe it. And I wish, if I could transport you back in the time, there are about 20 to 30 things in my life that I'd like to share with this entire audience. I would like to bring every Vol fan into that room. I'd like to bring the young kids into that room. I'd like to take the young kids that are listening to me back to that era so you could see what it was like when Tennessee football was Tennessee football, when we valued ourselves here. And those were such fun days. Looking back on them, and it's like a lot of things in life. You don't appreciate things when they're unfolding. And then you look back in that rearview mirror and you go, man, I was there for that. And nobody can ever take it away from you. As a great Johnny Majors once said, nobody can ever take it away. But back to the fight itself, it was absolutely insane. It was classic. And those guys were nuts.
One of the Maynardville boys takes the megaphone out of his hand and literally beats him on the side of the head with it. I thought they drew blood. The next thing I know, the cops show up. The cops are taking that guy out of there, three or four people out of there, the Maynardville boys out of there, who had now started a fight. There were people breaking off, fighting in different sections. I look over at Max Howe. He's looking at me. We're shaking our heads. This thing's on. This thing is on. What do you do? Does this come with a roadmap? This is the kind of stuff we were doing back then. We were living on the edge. I didn't know any different. I thought this was everybody's normal. Max said, Tony, I've been in this business for a long time. I just got done in Atlanta. I saw Scott Farrell. I saw Johnny Renshaw. I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen anything like this. And I said, well, Max, I'm just having some fun here, man. That was one of the craziest, most insane days of my life, looking back on it. If it weren't for what happened in 2001. 2001 was 9/11. Now, in 2001, I was now on 95.7 FM. And the GM that put me on 95.7 was deposed. Happens to all of us in our business, by the way. Great lady, Carrie Mers, who has an advertising agency in town now. Great lady. Anyway, she gave me a chance. She looked at me and she said, you know what? I'm going to give you a chance, and we're going to promote you, and we're going to blow this thing up, and we're going to make it happen. And we're going to generate some money, and you're going to make a nice living, and we're all going to do our thing, and this market needs you.
Yeah, and we were sitting on this porch, and I'll never forget, Carrie sitting there, and she's kind of smoking a cigarette, and I'm out there on the outside of the building up there on Sharps Ridge. She looks over at me, and she goes, you ready to go to the show? You ready to go to the show? And I went, I don't know what that means, but sure, I'm ready to go to the show. Like going to a concert. She goes, we're taking 95.7 and we're flipping it. She goes, now those people on that station don't know that. And that's the hard thing about radio. And I've been in that position. I've been on both sides of it. I've had staff have to keep secrets from me. I've had to keep secrets from staff. I've been the guy whose station is getting flipped, and I've been the guy that gets fired and thrown out the door, and I'll tell you about that here in a second. And I've been the person that's to shut up, do my job, keep my head down, because I'm not God, and I don't control things like that, but you just got to kind of watch it happen. But Carrie Mers believed in me, and for that, I'm eternally grateful. She gave me an opportunity to do that. We did some great things over there. The great Patrick Mashburn worked with me. The great Dave Nathan, while he was still in college, who's now on Tar Heels Radio Network, worked with me. The great Chris Lowe, I believe, got his start in radio there. Chris Lowe was on with us. He used to do a Friday show with us. He was fantastic. We had a great radio station. We had Tony Bruno on in the morning. I did an afternoon show. We launched with Fox Sports Radio. We were their first affiliate. At least that's what I was told by them. And back then, I was program director of that station, so which is not something I'm not good at, by the way. Anything that requires details, I ain't your guy. Artistic, an ideas person. I'm better when I'm flying by the seat of my pants. I'm better when I'm on full autopilot, borderline burnout. But I'm not going to be a guy that's going to sit behind the desk for you, send in the affidavits to make sure the commercials played, all the legal stuff, all the payroll stuff. Carrie would say to me, you got budgets ready? You got budgets ready? And I'd be like, Carrie. And I remember sitting with my wife at the time, the lovely Laura, who's still my wife, but I don't know why I said wife of my time, but I remember seeing my wife back then, and I said, can you help me with this budget? And she said, you can't add. You can't add, Tone? And I'm going, well, no. I guess I can't. But Carrie Mers gave me a chance. We launched the first ever all-sports radio station. The first day on the air, we were on top of Charlie Peppers, the old Charlie Peppers on Cumberland Avenue, and we blew that thing up. I'll never forget that day. The great David Horn was there. The great Kevin Mays was there. The great Jeff Haw came by. There were a bunch of guys out there. We just had a terrific time. And Tim Burchett called in. And a bunch of people called in their congratulations. And it was just a big deal. And it was just so fun to be a part of something like that. And that little brief moment was the one time in my life when I was the hunted and not the hunter. But it didn't last long due to radio politics. It was out of my control. I'll tell you more about that here in a second, because I want to get over to another person in my radio career and tell you about how this almost didn't happen. And you'll find this a pretty interesting story, because trust me, right now, as you hear my voice and you've heard my voice all these years, for better or for worse, and I realize that, as nobody's perfect. But if it weren't for this one guy, I'm out of the business before I even meet Carrie. I'm out of the business. I'm out of the business. This business is a meat grind. It's a meat grinder. It will drive you out of your mind. And it's a beautiful, fun thing. It's a unique thing. But it'll make you crazy. It really will make you crazy. And I was about at my wit's end. Well, I'll tell you what. Let me just share the story with you here.
I want to back up. I want to say a word about a guy in management that I had at one time. And